And now what we're going to do is talk about Lieutenant Walter Haut and what he signed, what he witnessed back 60 years ago in Roswell, New Mexico. And then we will take phone calls with Bill Burns. The complete story will be written in my column in UFO Magazine in a couple weeks. And the very in-depth story, of course, will be in the book Witness to Roswell. Bill, very briefly, tell us the story that we've all heard about with regards to Roswell.
Here's the story we've all heard, that Walter Haut said, and you could find the story in old back issues of our magazine and other books, that Walter Haut got a phone call. He was aware of activity going on outside of Roswell, north of the town. There was a crash of something. He didn't know what. Gets a phone call from Blanchard, Colonel Blanchard, commanding officer of the 509th at Walker Field in Roswell, and says, Walter, I want you to write this press release, and I want you to get it out to all the newspapers and the radio station, and I want the press release to say that, look, the Army's picked up a flying saucer outside of Roswell.
Not a balloon, not a plane, but a flying saucer.
Blanchard's words, the Army's picked up a flying saucer, and, of course, flying disc was all over the West Coast. Stanton tells the story very well, that it's over the West Coast of the country, and the East Coast newspapers, it was late in the day, so the East Coast newspapers hadn't gotten the story yet. By the time the East Coast newspapers got the story the next day, the Army Air Force had already denied the story and said it was a weather balloon, but on the West Coast you had 2 days of news, and Walter Haut said that his phone rang off the wall, and he basically took off and left the base to let the phone ring. And that's the original story. It was really only a two-line story, and that was the end of it. That was the original story.
And then we've got the infamous picture, of course, of General Ramey, right, kneeling over all the wreckage of what they claim to be a balloon or something?
Right. At Fort Worth, they took a picture of, you had a picture of Ramey, you had a picture of Major Jesse Marcel, the base intelligence officer, over the wreckage of a balloon. And the Army basically empties the saucer story by saying it was really only a weather balloon. And how humiliating do you think that was? This is a vindication, by the way, for Jesse Marcel and Jesse Marcel Jr. at the same time. How humiliating do you think it must have been for the base intelligence officer of the 509th, a strategic air command unit, right? This was an atomic unit, to stand over a weather balloon and have to admit, oh, gee, I made a fundamental mistake. I can't tell what a weather balloon is. Imagine that humiliation in 1947.
And what we didn't know at the time was that Walter Haut had seen the real wreckage.
Now,
he inspected that.
Yes. Walter Haut had seen the real wreckage, George, you're right. And just as important, Jesse Marcel had seen the real wreckage. And even more important, there had been a strategy meeting before that famous news release was created. So Walter Haut begins. Now, this is a guy who basically, 2002, sets down these words. So he begins, it's basically a regular format of an affidavit. I'm Walter Haut. The date is December 26, 2002. It's sworn before a witness, and his signature is notarized by a local notary public. And he says what his name is. I was born June 2nd, 1922, et cetera, et cetera. I'm retired in 1947. He was the PIO at the Roswell Army Air Base at Walker Field. And then he begins that he was aware that someone had reported the remains of a downed vehicle in mid-morning on Monday, July 7th, after he came back from that July 4th weekend. And he was also aware, he says, that by late afternoon of that same day, he was learning that there were additional reports. So in other words, the story begins to grow from the civilian sector, not the Army sector, but the civilian sector. And we find out why, of course, in the entire story, that people were crawling over this place where somehow, some way, this vehicle had been downed. The next morning, hear these words. The next morning, it's July 8th, and he walks into the regular Roswell staff meeting, right? The Roswell Army Airfield staff meeting. Nothing unusual, right? It's 7:30 in the morning. And he looks around the room and he says, besides Blanchard, the commanding officer, and Marcel, their CIC captain, Sheridan Cavett. And, of course, we know that Cavett, with Marcel, went to the ranch with Brazel to find the debris. So then there's Patrick Saunders, Colonel John Hopkins, the operations officer. He lists the names of the people that were there. Major Isidore Brown, the personnel officer. Ulysses S. Nero, the supply officer. Here's the bombshell. And from Carswell Army Air Force Base in Fort Worth, Texas, Blanchard's boss, Brigadier General Roger Ramey, and his chief of staff, Colonel Thomas J. DuBose, were also in attendance. Get this. They didn't fly to Fort Worth to show Ramey the material for the first time. Ramey and DuBose came to Roswell on July 8th. They were there in the office with Marcel having a staff meeting. What was the main topic of discussion? As reported by Marcel and Cavett, it was the extensive debris field in Lincoln County, approximately 73 miles northwest of Roswell. A preliminary briefing was provided by Blanchard about, get this, a second site approximately 40 miles north of town. Not one, but two. So all the years were now vindicated. There were two sites. Here comes the bombshell again. Samples of wreckage were passed around the table. Okay? So that everybody in that room, Blanchard and Hout, and Ramey, and DuBose, and Cavett, and Marcel all sat as samples of the wreckage were passed around the table. It was, and here's what Hout says, it was unlike any material I had or have ever seen in my life. Pieces which resembled metal foil paper, thin yet extremely strong, and pieces with unusual markings along their length. Here's Jesse Marcel's junior story, absolutely proven, were handed from man to man,
I'm getting chills,
Bill. Their opinion, no one was able to identify the crash debris. There you go.
Whatever crashed there was obliterated. However, there's another bombshell.
That's right.
The bodies.
Here it comes. One of the main concerns was whether we should go public with the discovery. General Ramey proposed a plan, which I believe originated with his bosses in the Pentagon. Attention needed to be diverted from the more important site north of town by acknowledging the other location north of town because too many civilians were already there. So here in paragraph 9, Hout describes the cover story everybody came up with at the table to divert attention. Then, after the meeting, Blanchard phones me, and he dictates the press release that I'm supposed to give to the newspapers and radio stations KGFL and KSWS. And then, you ready? Before leaving the base, Blanchard suggests that Hout go to Hangar Building 84, a B-29 hangar located on the east side of the tarmac. Now, here's where the other witnesses now get vindicated. Upon first approaching the building, I observed that it was under heavy guard both inside and outside. Don Schmidt and Tom Carey explained to me this morning that these were soldiers that came from other units as well, so already the Army was compartmentalizing who'd have access to the story. Okay? Now, once inside, I was permitted from a safe distance to observe the object just recovered from north of town. And here it is. Ugh. It was approximately 12 to 15 feet in length, not quite as wide as 6 feet, and more of an egg shape. Now, if you remember the story from the witnesses of this object being flatbedded through town,
right,
they didn't talk about a delta. They talked about an egg-shaped object under a tarpaulin. And here is the confirmation of that. Lighting was poor, but its surface did appear metallic. No windows, no portholes, no wings, no tail section, no landing gear. Then finally, here it comes. Also from a distance, Hout writes in paragraph 13, I was able to see a couple of bodies under a canvas tarpaulin. Only the heads extended beyond. on the covering, and I was not able to make out any features, but the heads did appear larger than normal, and the contour of the canvas over the bodies suggested the size of a 10-year-old child. And at a later date, he says that Blanchard, in his office, stood there and held his hand up 4 feet high and said that was the size of these creatures.
Oh, my gosh. Stay with us. We'll take your calls with Bill Burns next on Coast to Coast AM.